Hello and welcome back to the Hansen Cast with me, Emmett Lewis, and my electric shocked haired co-host, Mikael Christiansen. First off, before we get the show rolling, I'd like to apologize. We're a bit delayed because in my infinite wisdom, the last episodes we had recorded that were meant to go out, I managed to format the memory card that they were on before I'd actually edited them. So right. Then they were gone. I couldn't recover them. So yeah, the last show, we're like talking like, yeah, we're going to have everything on schedule this month and, you know, we've got more time and blah, blah, blah. And then I fucked up. So, So a slow start to the new year. Mm-hmm. But sorry about that, guys. Other than that, as usual, we're having technical difficulties where Mikael's microphone has decided to explode. So the audio quality mightn't be as good as normal, but I'll try to do my best I can in the edit. But I'm sorry if it's not as great as it normally is. Other than that, how are things going, Mikael?
Other than the microphone being, I don't know what happened. Even like you plug in the plug and then it's just, hi, the plug isn't plugged in. Like the regular old shit. And like the plug just like kind of rattles around in there. I haven't done any, like that microphone has been lying in my drawer forever too.
Yeah.
Or either it's the gnomes that have been chewing on it or, I really don't know what else it could be.
Yeah, who knows?
Well, other than that, can't complain. What is it he says in the Chernobyl series? 3.6 Röntgens. Not great, not terrible.
Yeah. Our equipment only goes up to 3.8 Röntgens.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, that series was great. I don't know if anyone else has watched it. But,
It's pretty fucking suspenseful, especially when the liquidators go down into the... like underneath the to open the valves and stuff in the contaminated water. All those guys actually made it. Like none of them died from that. And like I think all of them lived to like reasonably old age, at least, or they're still alive or so.
Yeah, I think there's some of them passed away recently as well, or something. I think there's something about it. It's like we didn't expect these people to make it.
Yeah,
but let's face it. Yeah, Ukrainian nuclear power plant operators, tough as fucking nails.
Probably.
It's kind of, I remember watching the trailer for that and I thought it was going to be a horror series, like a fictional horror series based around Chernobyl, not just like, here's literal horror.
Yeah, true. Actual horror. Yeah. No cosmic ultra beings.
Just
plain old humans being human, bad enough.
Yeah, other than that, how are things going, Emmett?
Yeah.
Things are going, all over the place. The last month has been an absolute disaster for us. Like it's literally like the universe has conspired to hate me and my lifestyle and basically everything was going wrong. On Christmas night we had a pipe burst on a radiator. Luckily we were awake and we were able, like I heard it go and I was able to get down and turn it off and mop it up before, because if we were still asleep it would have just flooded the whole house. So
that is terrifying.
And that was the second time it popped as well. Anything you can think of that could go wrong has gone wrong. Well, you know, such as life in the monasterium.
Mm-hmm.
Baby was sick, but she's okay now. The dog is still being disobedient, but that's his style.
Such is dog.
He loves the baby, though. That's the important thing. He loves the baby. Mm-hmm. He's very gentle with her, although he can leave them alone or anything like that. But so that's my main concern. Helps. All that when we got the dog first, I spent a lot of time just like basically abusing him in a way a kid would, like pulling on his ears, sticking my fingers in his teeth, holding his teeth, pulling on his tongue, but giving him loads of treats when I was doing it. So now when I hold the baby near him to pet him, she just pulls out of him. He's just like, oh yeah, this is great, where's my treats? Never leave them unsupervised. That's a warning if your dog, no matter how good your dog is, how great it is, never leave your kids with your dog unsupervised. But other than that, good. Other than that, I'm fucking wreck at the moment. I'd say just a bit of a thank you to all those people who contacted me. I remember putting a few casts ago just asking if people were having weird connective tissue jank post-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that, I think I said it already, but it seems to be a not super common thing, but seems to be a thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm constantly just like, I tweet the rotator cuff muscle doing a back rotation at a workshop recently. I was just demonstrating. So a joint rotation, you know, meant to be the simplest form of exercise, or one of the most simplest, like non-load or anything. It's just like, ha ha ha, rotator cuff. So I think I need to just like, I don't know, what's that thing in Avatar when they give them new bodies? Yeah, I just want that with like my old body.
Mm.
Would be nice.
Yeah, you just need to like somehow copy yourself and and then like add some like youth elixir to that one, and then do some consciousness transfer. No big
trend deal. Malone.
Yeah, yeah, or trend. That's
that's probably just like trend Malone, and just commit. Just that's it. Go full Liver King mode. I'm just gonna eat liver and take trend Malone. And claim it's the liver.
I saw a great YouTube comment. I don't give a shit or follow Liver King, but there was a really great YouTube comment where someone said, what was it? I thought his name was Liver King because of his liver surviving all of that gear he's been taking for years. that is a better.
Yeah, it sums it up.
Yeah,
the man is like,
he can handle a lot of saws. Here too, things are not terrible, as I said. Been having like last term, essentially like that half year was just bonkers in terms of travel. I was everywhere all at once. So it was just too intense. So when I got back to mom's place for Christmas, I sat in the couch in the same exact place for 3 weeks. I folded paper, I played Elden Ring, I went to train, and then I went back to sit in the same place on the couch and fold more paper and play more Elden Ring. And that's what literally my entire routine for 3 weeks. I didn't go out to see friends. I didn't celebrate New Year's Eve. I just hardcore sat on the sofa, which felt really needed. Just like, I think I was pretty fried just mentally. And like the thing is, like all of last half year, I knew that pressure I was kind of putting myself into in the relations of like I was constantly somewhere, constantly traveling, never home, always having something to do, and none of like many of those or most of the things were great experiences. It's just like there was no processing time. Yeah. So when I finally got back, I just like I hadn't really noticed, or I had decided to not notice how tired I was. Like my strategy was just denial and paper folding. So whenever I was too tired or just like too blasted, I was just like, okay, let's design an origami and just like get everything at a distance through doing that. And it worked. But yeah, then as I got back, had a little bit of a crash, now feeling a whole lot better and kind of a little bit like resuscitated in many ways.
You need these things sometimes.
Yeah.
It basically goes back almost to like that episode we had on aging. It's like, sometimes you really just have to listen to what you need.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you need to go, I think it's called going goblin mode nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to go goblin mode, you need to go goblin mode.
Yep.
That's what all the cool kids are calling it.
Oh, yeah.
Goblin mode.
The Gen Z motherfuckers.
Gen Z. We're past Gen Z. We're on the Gen Z. Now. What's the new gen? Gen Alpha?
What's
your new one now?
Gen Z, your days are numbered. They're probably scary. But topic, do we have one? We had a topic last week.
We have to do it again.
Deleted the thing. Yeah, right. So let's pretend we never talked about it and repeat, right?
Yeah. I actually can't really remember what we said.
What I said either. Like, I never remember what we say. I feel that's kind of the charm of this podcast for my part, is that like people, like occasionally people go, like, oh, yeah, you talked about this thing on the podcast. I'm like, well, what did I talk about on the podcast? Like, I still haven't listened to anything. The only episode I ever listened to was the one where we were shit talking about the standing on, or like the standing on feet April Fool's joke. That one I listened to, because when you started talking about that, like you had taken away all the backs of all the chairs in your house to work on your posture, we fucking lost it for like a good 30 seconds. That one I listened to. That was great.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite ones. The best one was like, we got a lot of people with that one. They're just like, oh, when's this program? I'd buy that program. And a lot of people are like, you can't actually sell that. Or brick also caused a lot of fucking rage on like, I could just buy a brick in my local hardware store. Why are you selling this fucking hipsters? That's the point.
It's a joke. Dude, it's almost like that's what's so funny with the internet, since like it's impossible to create like real context online. Yeah. It's like, do we need a large banner that says, this is a joke?
No. We haven't had an email to the inbox. I'm sorry if you're listening. who got really fucking angry about us shipping bricks around the world in climate crisis.
Oh, sorry, we got you so hurt. Yeah, yeah. Do you even joke? I mean, like, if you've listened to one episode of podcast or seen any of the shit we do, I mean, like, it should be you. I don't know. Maybe we haven't been clear enough. But let me say it again. It's a joke.
Yeah. Anyway, it's able for, maybe we should just start selling bricks. A few people probably wanted to buy it.
Yeah.
This is a thing. So I think our topic last time was kind of, what is the point of Handstand Factory, or what are we trying to get out of it, or what are we doing? Yeah, basically. What was it? You had a cool word for it, but it began with A, but my language skills are failing. Was it aspirations? Maybe it was aspirations?
Absolutions
or?
Absolution, like I don't think it was. Maybe it was the aspirations.
We're seeking absolution by doing Handstand Factory. It is our penance.
Yeah, so I think it's, we were talking about that a little bit before the cast that time. And just like, yeah, so what is the point of doing this thing? And like, what's kind of the rationale behind Handstand Factory? And of course, I mean, you can't get around the fact that, of course, it's a way for us to make income and like being able to monetize our skills and like so on. But at the same time, as anyone involved in these kind of extreme niche fitness shit should know, that like if we wanted to get rich, we'd be doing something else. It's just,
if we get rich, we'd be doing six packs and selling liver tablets.
Yeah, selling six pack abs on like with YouTube ads, or just become criminals.
Who says we aren't? Commit tax fraud.
Mm-hmm. But in all seriousness, I mean, like, of course, it's a very, any day and age, it's important to be able to use the skills you have for something so that you can make a living. Because if you don't, then you either need to stop doing those things or do something else to make a living, and then like try to cram in some like low quality shit on your free time. Because let's face it, like a job takes many hours and is important to do. So that is, of course, an important thing. But I think like the thing I'm happy about in general about this entire project is that it's sort of, it's more a result of just things that feel natural to do anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like look back at it, like in 2009, I was writing posts on gymnastic bodies about like handstand technique and how to practice. And like, I was like analyzing this stuff and talking with like-minded people about it because I found it interesting. So like the fact that there is a legit interest behind it that wasn't like created as a, okay, I want to find what can I monetize. I'm going to monetize this. I'm going to create a strategy and then I'm going to do that, rather being it like a kind of form that's like, hey, this is something that we have been discussing and thinking about for years. And then that kind of like shifting into like, okay, yeah, well, this is something we could do something with. Makes you feel natural and kind of organic, rather than being like, okay, now I'm gonna like just like look, do some market research and like, oh, hey, there is a hole in the market here. Let me earn the monies, which is also fair, but that's kind of not how it started.
No, we do not like, we went into the project without really going, oh, we're gonna try and monetize this as hard as possible and other stuff, and we just basically wanted to do it for the sake of like, the main goal for me for Handstand Factory is actually documenting, you know, the training and the concepts, because it's kind of one of those things, like we've just been kind of looking at the true art and science of hand balance, and we're going to do a review of that in the next cast, and just like, it hasn't been documented in a while. It's just one of those things, just to basically get it down on paper. Get it down into a form that suggests, well, obviously now paper is great, but also, you know, we have digital formats and everything is easier to distribute. So these kind of ideas are just like going, this is how we, this is how we think about these things. This is what we've come from, you know, about our experience and about our coaching. And, you know, maybe it's useful to have. Well, that's kind of, you know, just give you guys a hint on one of the things coming next year is, we have one more course to finish in the Handstand Factory syllabus, Flag and Figa on one arm. So that'll be one bigger course. We're going to say all the things we're releasing next year. Yeah, why not? So we have one arm shapes, so all the straight shapes on one arms. We have bend deeper, which will focus on scorpion handstands and scorpion style and contortion style stuff. We have flag and figa on one arm. And then we have switch, so switching arms on one arm. These should all come out next year.
I.e. 2023.
Oh yeah, this year. I'm still in 2022. I haven't, like, the year doesn't really start to me till like Chinese New Year. It's my excuse. It takes me that long to learn to start writing three at the end instead of two. So they're basically, some of them are already shot and ready to go, or ready-ish to go. A bit more filming, but then they're ready. Then once they drop, we're going to start working on our textbook, which will be awesome.
The tome.
The tome. And yeah, once that's done, then we're just going to retire into the sunset.
Yeah. Yeah.
You retire into the sunset.
Lie on an internet beach. But yeah, like it's, I think actually that is a good example of a little bit of the, the ambition of the project is that like a lot of that stuff isn't very sellable.
Yeah.
Because like there are very few people that have the need for that level of information, since it's like you need a hell of a lot of level or years of experience. And like, to be fair, a lot of people that reach those levels, they are already good enough to figure out a lot of stuff themselves. But what we're trying to do is, like, for example, I think one of the best examples of this is like when we were thinking about documenting and like creating training methodologies for like one arm switches, for example. Like it's not something you can make a program out of. And that isn't the point either, because like the further on you go into, or like if you start in the beginning of the vocabulary, let's say you start as basic as like random person that has no physical ability whatsoever, you might need to just like build up a little bit of body strength, like i.e. doing sets and reps of stuff with like a very, very regimented and simple training. And then you move into handstand training, which is still really reasonably regimented and reasonably simple in kind of more straightforward than the more advanced. Then you go further, and then things become more and more specific. And suddenly, like, the things are not as easy to just put into sets and reps. And like anyone that goes deep into the vocabulary see that like sets and reps become almost meaningless on a lot of things. But what matters is kind of training methodologies, ways of thinking about it, how to practice the things, more so than telling you like do X reps of this. And that's what was interesting, like, or a kind of a personal challenge to me and like to us, which I think is interesting in the long term of this kind of thing, is like you like, and this is like part of what I find is very interesting. Can I take a skill which is as complicated as one arm switching and break it down into components that are useful in a learning process? And I was thinking, what stuff did I use when I learned it, and what stuff what stuff could I kind of wish that I knew when I started learning it? So stuff like that is more, I mean, of course, it becomes a product, one which I like is not useful for most people because they're just not at the kind of level of readiness for it. But it's something that creates a, like, it's a list of tools. It's a way of, like, various ways of practice and so on. And I find that to be a very fascinating and more like that. That is more like doing that kind of stuff is more because I really think it's interesting. Like the challenge of, can this be made into categories that are useful for more people? What did I use before? What can I add to it that I haven't been seeing been used before, that I've not noticed through coaching and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So it's, like, there's a lot of this stuff going into it that, like, it's very interesting to dissect, analyze, and so on, and seeing what kind of results you get through that.
Yeah, it's definitely like my ultimate fantasy with the kind of textbook. You know, the textbook would be the best thing. The video course would be good, but like aliens descend to Earth and like erase from everyone's brain the concept of a handstand. And they delete all the internet and everyone forgets what a handstand is. And then 100 years time, someone finds this book in a library and then just is able to actually teach themselves a handstand all the way from the start, all the way to the advanced skills. And I feel it's important for me. You know, it's obviously a bit egotistic to get this kind of stuff out. But, that would be awesome if you could have something that's just kind of complete. Because, like, we have it in other sports. Like, obviously, you can never be completely complete. But, like, say, when I first learned Olympic lifting, for example, there's a guy called Greg Everett who has a book on Olympic lifting, how to learn, you know, snatch, clean and jerk, clean, you know, all that, what exercises are important, here's some programs. But it's very good. Like, I was able to get to a point where, I don't know, from the back of that book, just using that and asking a couple of trainers in the gym who also done a bit of CrossFit Olympic lifting, they able to get like 100 kg snatch and shit like that out of it. So it was, you know, this is the way, like, you know, knowledge was transmitted through history, was this kind of, you know, we didn't have video until very recently. Obviously, video is great and definitely helps. But there is this idea of just like, oh, books will, you know, like Nassim Taleb, when he made predictions about like what's still going to be around in the future, what technologies are going to be in the future, what's still going to exist. And he was just like, well, the only way we can really say what's still going to exist is, you know, technology is changing. We have to look in the past and see what we had in the past. So here's my predictions. People will have shoes because people have had shoes for 30,000 years that we know about, or something like Otzi, the iceman who they found in ice, had a pair of shoes. And they were not just like foots wrapped with skins. They're actually like a manufactured product. This kind of stuff. People will have knives. People will have books. These things kind of last. Whereas other stuff, like at the end of the day, like I have a hard drive that I can't get onto. That's like the backup of two of my last computers. Mm-hmm. I can't use it on this computer because it doesn't recognize the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, data retention is weird. Whereas if I had a book with everything written out in my computer, I'd be able to pick my book off the shelf and read it instantly. So there is a kind of this kind of, I don't know, I like to think of it as a snapshot of like, this is how we're training things now. This is how, you know, I'm not even saying like, you know, as we've always stated, we don't have the final method. We don't have the ultimate method that can teach every single person, you know, and other people do things differently to us. And there's definitely room, you know, for other people to do other things, and that's it. But it's just like this snapshot of like, hey, we're two guys, we've done this a lot and we've taught this a lot, and this is how we think about it.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of
pretty much and yeah, referring back to what will then later be our next episode, kind of the true art and science of hand balancing, there existed and there are several textbooks that you can still find kind of the PDFs of some of them online and so on, about the art of hand balancing, but from another older perspective, which is super interesting to read. I remember that, like, when I got into hand balancing around 2008, I went online, I found the True Art and Science of Hand Balancing, and I bought it as kind of like a paper version, but it wasn't like the original book. I wish I had it, but it was super interesting to just see. And of course, then I didn't know much. I like all of it is, of course, it's like the technique is from the 1920s and stuff. So like, there's a lot of like arching. That's what they talk about. That's what you're supposed to use in that way of thinking.
Yeah.
But it's super interesting to just see how they were thinking about it, how they were documenting it, and people were ridiculously good. Like it's written by Professor Paulinetti, who apparently was the first man to do the full planche and the one arm planche. Like, the guy could do, like, I would still assume he's still one of the best hand balancers in history. Like, he could do a, like, from a crocodile, he could just do a one arm handstand push up, like, all the way up from a crocodile. He even describes distinctly in that book, like, how it feels and how he twists his hips and stuff, which is exactly the same as you see, like, the best people nowadays do it. And it says that when the boys were kind of like testing their skills and showing each other up, he would usually end the discussion by sitting down on the floor, putting his hand between his legs and just press into a one arm handstand. And that would be like how he would kind of like finish it up. So these people could do everything. Done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very fascinating. Like the wording they use is different from nowadays. The technique, and we're gonna get a whole lot into that.
Let's save that one for the next one, because that's gonna be super cool. It might be a two-parter because there's so much in it.
Yeah, there's so much in it. But the point is that like it's it's just like when I got into this, I was just really fascinated, like all of the thinking methods. And while it might not be the best teaching book for how people do things nowadays, or maybe even for how it was back then, because it's rather rudimentary in the way it kind of, you can depict things, the pictures are very, like, not of the greatest quality. And so, but it's interesting to just see and to like how that it's been thought of. And of course, like you said, that like there are textbooks in very many different movement styles and so on. And I mean, like, there does exist written stuff about hand balancing, hand to hand, etc., a lot in Russian and stuff that is inaccessible, at least to me, due to language. I'm sure in sport acrobatics they have certain books and so on.
Yeah, but it's sports like, acro, I found some of them over there. They have a lot of, like, you get these things in gymnastic classes or gymnastic halls, generally stuffed in the back of a storage closet, where there's like, it's literally just like someone's photocopied something multiple times, and it has like loads of stuff in it, but it's a lot of times in like stick figures, very rudimentary drawings, it shows all like the stages to something.
Yeah.
But there is that kind of implicit knowledge where it's just like, it's just implied that like you are a coach or you're in a facility that has this stuff. So you're familiar with the stuff. So when you look at something, you go, oh, that's just like what we've done before.
Mm.
And then these stick figures show, you know, the right way of doing it to get the full score or the levels, or also like where you would get deductions.
Mm.
And that kind of stuff. I found them for sports acro and stuff like that as well. And it's just like, oh, but it's like, you know, if you don't have someone there who knows it, nothing's explained.
Yeah,
so you don't like,
I think like one very important thing to about this is that like these things are generally physical and verbal traditions. Like, even a lot of like, I'm not that involved in gymnastics, but it seems that like most of like the brilliant gymnastics coaches around there, they teach based on their experience. They have been around, they know how it looks, they know how it's supposed to feel, you know, how they train it. But like, and of course, within that sport, there exists a lot of documentation and research and so on. But like, I think in a lot of cases, it just comes down to like, you know how it's done, and then you physically and verbally explain to people.
Yeah.
And that is like, especially in circus, that is how the tradition has largely been done forever. And that is great. But being able then to put things into a different format is interesting, because there are certain things that those formats can teach over time, that like, and over distances, because like you can't always be present in, like, you can only be one place at a time. But it's cool then to both have, of course, the internet and kind of the digital media versions of it, where you can show, you can stop videos, you can detail, you can talk, you can do all these things. Of course, you do lack the touch, you do lack the tactile experience, but of that, but still, there are things that can be done with that, which I think is very is useful, and it's an interesting challenge to be able to take what do we know in this experiential feeling, and are we able to transcend that medium into something else? That in itself is an interesting challenge, and something that, like, I remember, like I said, back in the days where I was writing on forums online just for no, like, I guess the main reason I did it was, of course, to share it. But a lot of the information weren't even useful to many people there, because like they didn't have the prerequisites to use it. But it was an interesting thing for me. Like, can I verbalize the feeling of what's going on in my body so that someone else can at least associate or understand something? I found these things intensely interesting, and still do. And of course, like, it's, to me, since I've done it for many years, teaching a two-arm handstand is still interesting. But I find it very fascinating to look, okay, like for example, I've taught a lot of people to do switches, for example, and it's like, it's funny with a move like that. There's just so much detail and technique, but then like you convey all that, but at the same time you just convey that just turn off your brain and put the hand on the block. Like, it's like that kind of interplay between those two very, very different approaches to it are both super useful. And how can that be put into a process, essentially speaking?
Because
I think that's what we're trying to do here. Like, we're trying to create process that like leads you from something and further on, while like in one way, we're trying to create something that's streamlined, that'll hit quote unquote most people, but at the same time being able to say, hey, yeah, this is a way to do it, but like there are other ways that you might need, because we can never know every single body. And I think in relation to something that I was speaking to people with about this kind of online programming and stuff, and like, well, is it good, is it not, like what can you really achieve, what can you hope to achieve with like generalizing it, and it's like, well, like at one point you have to generalize something. If you don't, then and you're basically just saying, well, I don't know, figure it out. But if you're generalizing and you're saying, okay, these principles apply most of the time, and then in certain times or certain bodies, certain people might need to think differently, you have that door open all of the time. I feel it's like what we've been trying to do all the time with this, because like, we've run into so many people with all these like weird variations. You say, oh, hey, I didn't know that was fucking possible. Like, okay, that's cool, I guess, but oh, sick, someone could do it that way. I've never seen that before. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely that kind of thing. Yeah. Weird bodies. I think we've done a cast on that.
Yep.
It's definitely it's definitely one of those ones where you're just like, I've seen this, but not that way.
Yep.
I think a lot of people saying that. I was like, it can't, the amount of times I've been, over the years, I've been told, you can't do it that way. It has to be done this way. And then find someone doing it, not just the wrong way, but doing it better than the person saying, you can't do it that way.
Yep.
And I've been guilty of that myself. You know, there's many things over the years where it's like, I've been like, oh yeah, this is how you do it. And yeah, it can't be done that way. And like, lo and behold, someone's doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to go eat some humble pie. But you know, that's the joy of being, that's also the joy of being in something so long, is you get to see so much. I think that's, you know, it's joy of the internet as well. Like, there's so much stuff I've seen on the internet. Yeah, well, so much bad stuff I've seen on the internet. Daily dose of darkness. But also, we're just like, oh, I would have never seen that because there's only one person in the world doing it this way, but they're doing it.
Mm.
You're just like, oh, cool. Well, that's changed my frame of reference for what's important.
Mm.
That's, yeah. That's what we're doing. It's like, everything's like, fundamental skills, like everything, what's important, and then can we strip away everything unimportant? That's what I think. Just I keep going back to Palinetti now. Shouldn't, but in the thing he says, like a lot of stuff, what he says is important is the exact same as what we would say is important.
Mm.
But like their whole aesthetic is completely different.
Yeah,
and what they do is different. And it's just like, well, they're doing it different, but the fundamental principles are the same.
Mm.
That kind of distillation, I suppose, of our understanding of fundamental principles is what we're getting at, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's like, it's still interesting. I'm quite almost surprised sometimes. It actually still is interesting after this many years of involving myself with it. But I think in that, like the teaching aspect makes it more interesting too, because it's like, I guess any not just physical, but any kind of thing you involve yourself with because you like it, like it's interesting sharing it with others, whether or not that is like you get information or experience from them or the opposite, or just like kind of the like jamming together with someone or bantering or like kind of the back and forth exchange of ideas and concepts and whatnot is it keeps it fresh. It keeps it like there's something to come back to in it. Yeah. And the fact that like that's also something we've talked about a lot, that like our teaching method changes over time. Like it's just like, oh hey, yeah, I thought this was very important, and then suddenly like, oh no, wait, I've suddenly changed a little bit my mind, or not necessarily changed mind, but like seen variations on it, or just like wording that changes, that like I felt like last time we did the retreat, like there was like these new sort of concepts that I felt was interesting in relation to like the stuff that I talked about then, about like you, if you want to make one aspect of a skill harder at a certain point in time, then you might need to make another aspect easier so that you can deal with this harder concept. And a good example of that is like, let's say you're a beginner and you want to start moving your legs. You want to try to straddle in your handstand, but your kick up is kind of hit and miss. And if you try to kick up and then straddle, like that might be a little bit too much for you at the moment. So then you just, you take one step back, you go to the wall with the stomach to wall, you go into your handstand, and then you straddle, which means that you, you made your setup easier because you're going to do a harder thing after the setup. And this kind of thing can be like implemented in many different ways, but it's like, that's not something I thought about 3 years ago. Like, and then suddenly, hey, this is quite sensible. And then
this is kind of a good example of like stuff you would do anyway with someone. It's like, okay, I'm just going to do this, but no one's actually said, oh, this is actually what I'm doing. I find that's the kind of like, it's making the invisible visible. I suppose.
And you distill a concept out from what you're doing in some.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I think that's a lot of like when you're explaining stuff is like, oh, we're trying to make, you know, the classic way, like a lot of the coaching I do with people, particularly for more advanced stuff, is like I'm explaining a concept or something they have to do, not because I expect them to be able to replicate what I say or demonstrate, but because when it happens, they actually have a vocabulary to label it.
Hmm.
Like, oh, that's what he meant by do this. That's what he meant by hip more down. Oh, this is what he meant when it attains verticality. This is, you know, this is what it was. This is what he's explaining. So then you just get this link between abstract information and implementation, but then also acknowledgement of the implementation.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes like this benchmark of like, okay, cool. I felt it. I felt it once. Now maybe I can replicate it, or I'll know when I didn't feel it.
Mm.
And that's kind of making these things like, yeah, making them visible, shining a light on the skills, shining something into the darkness.
Mm.
So it's not just, it was like, you know, as we've said in the cast, like if you just kept attempting a one arm, you know, you could do a two arm, you just go over, doesn't matter what shape you chose. Eventually you'd get there.
Yeah.
Like we can't deny that. That would happen.
That's what I did. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's how I literally did a shit one arm in breaking. I just shifted over enough times, and then the body finally, like after loads of trial and error, and like it was with like no consistency or good technique or whatnot, but like it figured out like okay, this is how this can happen. So it can work, but is it like something that is replicable and specifically, or maybe more specifically, that like is it something that is to any degree predictable and transferable from person to person?
Yeah, literally. That's the kind of thing. Replicability is probably the important thing.
Yep.
Peer-reviewed replicable science that is replicated, though no one replicates science anymore, because why would you do that? Because it's not sexy and doesn't get funding.
Find something new.
Yeah. Try something new. Yeah, there's a lot of like, this is a kind of interesting thing, actually, just as a segue into science. So I was reading some biochemistry stuff recently, and they're talking about replicability in biochemistry, and they're trying to replicate, you know, someone put in some research, like cell culture research or something, I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, and people couldn't replicate what they were doing based on the papers they'd put out. It just wasn't working for them.
Mm.
They're going, oh, your results aren't right. But then I think someone spoke to one of the labs that done it, and they narrowed it down to the lab that got the first result was using stainless steel petri dishes to culture the cells in, and all the other labs normally use glass petri dishes.
Mm.
And that's one of those things, like, because you just go into lab, you have equipment, you use it, you get your results, you document it. But that kind of invisible side of things, where it's like, oh, we didn't mention we use stainless steel because we didn't think people were using glass, or vice versa. And then it's like, oh, well, actually the steel had an effect on the result. And now then, you know, other labs replicated the result when they just got some steel petri dishes.
Mm.
I think it was petri dish, something like that. It was a steel piece of equipment they were using anyway. Maybe it was a rotovap or something like that. Anyway, but it was just like, it's kind of that invisible thing in the environment was giving the result.
Mm.
And no one thought about it. It wasn't documented.
Mm.
Like, oh, we're using this. And then everyone else was going, oh, no, your result is wrong because we've tried to replicate it. Mm. And then they were using what they had to hand, but no one had actually made the visible or the visible invisible thing into the visible visible thing.
Mm.
I think that's kind of like a lot of training stuff as well. It's like, oh, we have a lot of standardized training equipment. you know, weight plates are all assumed to be this, and, you know, bars are assumed to be that, and other stuff. But then sometimes it's not.
Mm.
Like, all these kind of things with people who set, like, there was a bar known in one of the gyms I trained at called the PR bar, because it was a 15 kg. It was like an old 15 kg bar that was the same as a 7 foot normal bar. It wasn't like one of the smaller Olympic bars.
Mm.
So you'd use this bar and you'd be like, oh shit, I set a 5 kg PR on my lift. Oh, awesome. But no, you just used the PR bar.
Mm.
Someone even wrote PR bar on it eventually because they got sick of like setting PRs.
Yeah, you were suddenly 5 kilos stronger all the time. Yeah. Oh my God.
The PR bar. It's a great bar. I loved it. Yeah, so that was kind of, you know, these kind of things that were, you know, as a different example of like what we're trying to do. But, you know, it's probably going to be an impossible task to document everything that makes things work.
Yeah, of course. I think it's like it is impossible to document everything, but I do think that I do think the attempt is worth it of like at least trying to figure out what things matter the most to document, or what matters the most. And like back to that like basic old principle that we were trying to use of like finding the things that matter the most. And it goes back to as stupid as like, yeah, if you don't tense muscles, then you can't stand your hands. And you can go one step further. If you don't lift your arms above your head, well, you can't really do a handstand. And then, and so on and so on and so on. And they get less and less general as you go. But like, you could, for example, say like, it's pretty universal to say that like you want to elevate your shoulders when you handstand. That you will find quite a general consensus about that among the absolute majority of handstand coaches. And then like the further on you go, you might come into things that where some people say, well, when you flag, you need to glue your arm to your head. And then you have some who say that it can drift a bit, and then like, and so on. So like it spreads more out the further on you go, perhaps, but among the general principles, they're very similar. And it's more kind of the wording that people use that will be more different, and that is fine. Like, it's both fine that people think differently, and it's both fine that like a lot of it is the same.
But
being able to kind of isolate those that understanding, I do think is very worthwhile and very interesting in itself, because it brings you closer to what things matter, what things do not matter as much within our practice.
Yeah, exactly. What things start from day one, like the fundamental basics. I think every art kind of has these. It's like, oh, what's your fundamental basics? Okay, you'll need to do them a lot. But then as you get more advanced things, you know, I play guitar. Okay, plucking the strings is important. Putting my finger on the strings is important. But, you know, slowly, if I started playing jazz versus Detmer, they're probably similar. Jazz versus bluegrass, probably similar as well. You know what I mean? Something completely different music styles, things become less important, I suppose.
Hmm.
Or do they? Yeah, it is that kind of thing. Oh, shit. There's a woman in a horse and cart with, like, two ponies just outside my window.
That's where Emmett lives. He lives in a monastery, and it is glorious. Yeah. Can't wait to come there.
There we go. Yeah. Have you been yet? No, you haven't been.
Yeah.
Mika's coming over.
Yeah, I've been week, at the
monastery. Been? Oh, yeah, you froze, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, if you think it's bad, it's fucking freezing here at the moment.
Of course.
We're just going, oh, well, actually, we'll have the Dublin glazing installed by the time you're here, so it mightn't be too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess stuff like that is needed in the large stone mansion. I'm also used to the cold now since I was in my hometown. I'm like, basically, all right, don't do it right now. I stopped a few days ago wearing like
clothes.
Yeah, or like
Mikael is sitting on my screen right now. He's wearing like a tank top in Sweden. I'm sitting here. I've got a scarf, a hat, and my wizard cloak on to keep myself warm while we do this. And I also have the heating on beside me, but it's just like,
it is just a cold
like minus
house.
One.
I'll bring all my warm gear. When I come there,
yeah,
that shall be fine.
I think that's hitting the 45-minute mark. I think that's a good point to start
Then we can end it just as we ended the other one. Goodbye.
Yeah.
The Handstand Cast is brought to you by Handstand Factory and is produced by Motion Impulse. Thanks for tuning in. You can find a full transcript of each episode along with the show notes and any relevant references on handstandfactory.com/podcast. Thanks to Isaac for editing and Jordan for transcriptions. Music by Daniel Horwath. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com or consider starting one of our Handstand Factory online programs. Links are in the show notes.
Nice.